comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hey folks, and welcome to Talk Radio Like Nowhere Else on Earth. You matter, and that's why we're here. You have a right to know all those things that there are people busily trying to keep you from knowing. They think you don't matter, we think you do. We're broadcasting from the bridge of the KSS Starship, and we have another great show for you here tonight, but we almost didn't. Late this afternoon, when I was on the telephone and on the computer working with our guest for this evening, I experienced something kind of not really unusual, but frustrating. For those who are watching, I'm holding up the frustrating little bit of the computer. My guest and I, Grant Cameron, we were talking via Skype, and all of a sudden we didn't have audio. And the culprit is yet another one of these. As a matter of fact, it's the second of these to burn out within the last, three months. Now, these are good. They're not cheap, and they're sound cards. But, you know, we really, as we used to say in the South, we really use the hound dog out of these things. And they don't last as long as they would in a normal person's computer, shall we say. So, anyway, fortunately, we had another one that we could stick into the computer, and we did so, and we're able to be on tonight. But, like I say, sometimes, you know, small things create big problems, and certainly that happened to us today. I start off every show by saying you have a right to know. Every show, I say, you matter. And you have a right to know. And I say that because I truly, absolutely believe that we all have a right to know virtually everything there is to know. Now, are there some secrets that need to be kept? Sure. You know, national security things? Sure. There are some secrets that need to be kept. But a whole lot of things are being put into that bucket called national security. That's all anybody's got to do is, you know, somebody in the government says, oh, well, this would be a national security thing. And it falls into that bucket, and it never comes out. I mean, there's all kinds of information that does not need to be classified that is simply because someone didn't have the guts to say, you know what, it won't hurt for everybody to know this. It's safer, you see, for them to say it's national security. Well, do you remember there was a president who was being investigated for high crimes and misdemeanors, and the senators kept asking, what did the president know, and when did he know it? That's what we're going to be talking about tonight. We're going to be talking with Grant Cameron about the presidents and what do they know about UFOs. Yeah, and welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is someone that I think everybody in our audience knows about. If you don't know about him, you certainly need to know about him, and this is a great opportunity for you to meet him. His name is Grant Cameron, and he has been for a number of years providing a great service, and the great service he's been providing has been to investigate what do the presidents know, each president, what have they known about UFOs. Joining us from his home here in the United States of America, we're glad to welcome to the show this evening Grant Cameron. Grant, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Kevin, and just a little correction, I'm in Canada.
Ah, Canada. You know, I knew that. Eh? I did.
Eh.
So, well, you know, there's not a great deal of, there's a great deal of cultural difference between Canada and the United States, but geographically, it's an imaginary line. There aren't any real noticeable border markers in most places. And but anyway, from here in the northern hemisphere of the Americas, Grant Cameron. Grant, why are you interested and how did you get interested in looking into what the presidents have known about UFOs?
It all started with me in 1975. I had a series of sightings, and this was near some missile silos right on the U.S.-American border. And I had, over about 18 months, I had a whole series of sightings. And I went from there to interviewing all the people in the town to see what they knew about the sighting, how many of them had seen it. There was over half of the people who had seen it. And when I was finished it all, I basically wrote it up in a manuscript and didn't get much of a reaction from the publishers around. In fact, the main publisher in the city where I live said, "Mr. Cameron, you may believe in this kind of stuff. Count me among the unbelievers." And that led me to go and sort of give up on sightings. I've never really followed sightings since 1975. And what I did was I ran into a guy who was a radar tech who worked for the Canadian government, who had had a sighting during this Carmen period. And he said to me, he said, "If you really want to know what's going on with UFOs, you should go and investigate what the Canadian government had done." And that interested me because once you've seen a UFO, I tell people there's you can believe, you can disbelieve, and then there's people who know. I knew what I saw. I knew it was very unusual. It was nothing of this world, nothing I'd ever seen before or since. And so my interest was always to find out who knew about it and what exactly the answer was. So I went to investigate what the Canadian government had done from 1950 to 1954, and I basically went up the chain of command from there trying to find higher and higher level people who would know what the answer was. So I went from the Canadian government to led me to the former president of Penn State University, who had about 14 honorary doctorate degrees, and he was going to send his files to the Truman Library and the military files. So I went to the Truman Library to get the material from this Dr. Eric Walker at Penn State University. And when I got to the Truman Library, they didn't have the files I was looking for. And so I asked him, I said, "Well, what have you got on UFOs?" Because I figured, well, the president is the most powerful person in the world. The president constitutionally should know what's going on in terms of UFOs. For example, he's the commander-in-chief of the military. So if the military is running the UFO program, he should know. He's the chief executive officer of the government. So if it's the NSA or the CIA that's running the show, he should know. And he's also the head of state, which means if we're negotiating or dealing with somebody outside the United States of America, and that includes aliens, the president should be the person doing the negotiating. So this is the key person who should know what's going on. And the Truman Library, they basically told me, well, we've got a couple of files here, but really nothing. And that was in Independence, Missouri. And then just down the road, about maybe 150 miles down the road or 120 miles down the road, is the Eisenhower Library. So I figured, well, I'm close. I went to the Eisenhower Library, and I asked them, and you have to interview at the Eisenhower Library. So I went for an interview to research there. And I said to them, well, how many documents you've got on UFOs? And they said, well, we have five. And they had 28 million pages of files. And it was at that point that I decided something is wrong here. Either the president doesn't know what's going on, or the president doesn't know what's going on, and all the documents are missing. So I started to go from the president's library, each of the different presidential libraries, to find out what was in those libraries that would give us an answer to what's going on with the UFOs that I had seen in 1975.
So it's really, it was kind of something you sort of fell into. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
It sort of happened as an extension from other research.
Yeah, and when I started, I had an interest in death experiences. When I was at university, I had done a course on death and dying. I had gone to hospitals and I'd interviewed a chaplain on events that occurred around dying people. I was interested in that. I can remember at no point ever being interested in UFOs. What had happened was this sightings that occurred outside the city. I live just about maybe 60 miles north of the U.S. border, just above North Dakota. And what had happened was the sightings were taking place for, they started in February of 1975, and it was all over the media. It was in the newspaper. It was on TV. And we used to, as young kids, used to drive around the city and really do nothing. So I said to my friends, I said, well, let's go out and see what these people are looking at. And so we didn't do anything. And then in May of 1975, the sightings continued on. And one of the main TV networks here, the local affiliate in Winnipeg where I live, got a film of this thing jumping off the ground. And it was so commonly known there, it was called Charlie Red Star. So they caught this Charlie Red Star jumping off the ground, and it became a worldwide film. NBC ran it. It became a very famous film. And at that point, I said to my friends, I said, come on, let's go see what's going on out there. And we drove out there, and it was the old scenario of you buy the lottery ticket, you think, well, there's a chance, but absolutely no way you're going to win. And we went out there and drove into town, out of the town, around the town, and it was the old thing. It was like everybody was seeing it. It was in the news all the time. And, of course, when we go, it's not there. My friend who was driving, who I still know very well, said, well, we'll drive out of the town one more time. It was a small town, about 1,000 people. We'll drive back into town. If we don't see anything, we'll go home. If we had not seen anything coming back to the town the last time, I never would have gotten interested. I had no interest in the subject. We turned around, go back in town. We were about a mile out of town. This thing came right in front of the car. And it was not like, well, is that what everybody's talking about? Is this what's going on? It was, there it is. I knew it instinctively. This is what everybody was talking about. So for me, it was a type of thing where I basically, university, I still took courses, but I basically, this was something that just sort of took me by storm. The other people who were in the car really went on with their lives. Nothing really changed. But for me, this was something that just sort of, I was floored by this. And I just would go out every second day, and I would try to photograph the thing, get sightings, interview people. And it just sort of consumed my life. And I pulled out of it for a number of years after we went to this the guy from Penn State University, when that story sort of fell apart, when the media wouldn't pick up the story, when we put out a book on it, I sort of gave up. But when I got back with the presidents, I got even more deeply into the thing and determined that somebody knows what's going on, and I have to figure out who's in charge, who knows what's going on. So for me, it's now more of a game. It's something that I do to try to figure it out for myself, just to get the answer for myself.
How long have you been doing this?
1975, in May, I had the first sighting. It was about 2 weeks after the end of the Vietnam War, which I think had a connection to the sightings that I had, because basically, if you follow the research of Robert Hastings, he talks about the interest in UFOs in nuclear weapons and nuclear storage areas. In 1975, there was a series of documents that were released. The National Enquirer forced these documents out, which detailed a whole series of UFO sightings inside weapons storage areas along the Canadian-U.S. border. It was Loring Air Force Base in Maine, Wordsworth Air Force Base in Michigan, Malmstrom, Minot Air Force Base, which is the base in North Dakota just south of me. And these things were being seen all over the place. My sighting occurred 2 weeks after the end of the Vietnam War. My impression of what had happened was, because I didn't really know what was going on, and I went back 30 years later. The main guy had the most sightings. I had about 100 sightings of big objects, little objects. The main guy is the guy who owned the airport in Carmen, which is where all these sightings were taking place. And I said to him, I said, Bob, how many sightings did you have? He said, I had 150 sightings. And he was sort of the tour guide. People would come to Carmen. He would take the news crews out and sort of show them where these things were flying around. I said, Bob, how many sightings have you had since this took place? And he said, he talked about one in Phoenix. I said, no, in Carmen. How many sightings have you had in Carmen since 1976? He said, none. And I said, why were they here? And he said, well, you know why they were here. And I said, no, I have no idea why they were here. For 30 years, I have not known why these things came to this small town for 18 months and then suddenly disappeared and have not come back. And he said, the missile bases. We had all the Minuteman III missile bases, the Minot missile base is right there. Everybody in Manitoba knows about these missiles because you travel through North Dakota, you'd see these missile silos in farmers' fields. And we always said, you know, if the Americans really get the Russians angry, we're the ones that are going to be disappearing because the Russians will shoot their missiles and they're going to try to take out the Minot missiles. And the fallout is going to come right over our city. So we always knew that we were gone if there was ever a nuclear war. We're the first to disappear. So I knew about the silos, but it wasn't until he told me, and this was back, it was 30 years later, tells me, well, it was a missile silos. And it suddenly clicked that the Americans had a bad time in Vietnam. They had lost Saigon. They had pulled out of Saigon. And back in that time, it was the domino theory of politics, that they were afraid what was going to come next. Is it South Korea is going to fall? Is it the Philippines? It was the whole thing about the communists were going to take over the world with this domino thing, take one country after another. So what my impression was is that the missile silos had gone on alert. The Americans didn't know what was going to happen, so they put all the missile silos on alert. We didn't know it. We still don't know it. It's now been made public. But the UFOs picked up on the fact that these missile silos were on alert, and that's why in 1975 all these things were seen around Manitoba. And there's another story that sort of ties into that. If you take a look at one of the most famous cases, the Rendlesham Forest case, where you have the UFOs over this sort of missile storage area in Great Britain that the Americans had, and reports of UFOs shooting beams down into the missile silos. That occurred in December of 1980, and if you take a look at history, you'll see that that was when Poland had fallen, when Solidarity had taken over Poland, and the Russians had decided they were going to take it back. They put their troops on the border in December of 1980, and I think that's exactly what happened at Rendlesham Forest as well. The whole world was on alert. Would the Russians reinvade Poland, or would they not? And the UFOs picked up on the fact that all these missiles were on alert, and that's why they showed up at Rendlesham. And that's sort of the tie-in to what happened with me, that the aliens seemed very interested in nuclear weapons.
Okay, so when you got started into all of this research about the presidents, were you surprised to find that there's a lot of information, or were you surprised to find that there's almost no information? Which way did that go? Or maybe you weren't surprised at all.
I was actually very surprised. I told people numerous times that it is one of the most discouraging things in the world to go to a presidential library looking for UFO files. You can sit in there for days, and find nothing. There really is nothing. Very, very limited. I struck it rich with the Clintons. During the Clinton administration, I got from his science advisor's office, I got about 1,000 pages of material. which detailed the Rockefeller Initiative. When Lawrence Rockefeller decided it was time to release the UFO information, he was a big Democratic supporter. He was the type of guy that the president could just slough off. He decided he was going to the White House, Clinton. So this 1,000 pages of material detailed this initiative where Rockefeller tries to get the president to disclose UFOs. I also, from that material, was able to file about 100 Freedom Information Act requests with the Clintons after the president leaves office. He has 5 years to work on his files. He can do whatever he wants with his files, do memoirs and stuff. And after 5 years, the Freedom Information Act locks in and the documents start to become released. And I knew how the system would work because I'd worked in presidential libraries quite a bit at that point. So what I did was I filed about 100 Freedom Information Act requests, and I filed them 5 years to the date that President Clinton left. And suddenly all this material started to come out related to UFOs. And we knew it was there because from these documents that I had gotten from the Rockefeller Initiative, I knew exactly who'd been involved in the Clinton administration. I knew which files to go after, which documents to go after. And we filed all this stuff. And actually, the media actually did pick up on a lot of this stuff, trying to, at the very beginning when the material was being released in 2006, they were asking all the questions, why are all these UFO documents being released from the Clinton library when everybody's looking for Hillary's material because she was running for president? And basically, it's first come, first serve. And I had filed before everybody else, so a lot of this material was being released. Now, there are probably another maybe 3,000, 4,000 pages of material. And some of it has actually just recently been told to me that it's been released, it's been cleared, and I'm going there to look at this material. But a lot of the material has been sanitized, a lot of it has been withheld for various reasons. So I really haven't found that much that's all that interesting. But the Clintons were very interested in UFOs, and there's a lot of material. But other than the Clinton Library and maybe the Carter Library, there really, most of the libraries, there is literally nothing.
So how do you find out what the presidents know about UFOs if there's almost no documentation in these libraries? Now, we have a break coming up. So I'll let you sort of mull that over in your mind, but and we'll get to that when we come back from break. But how have you been able to stay active in this research all these years if you keep coming up with almost nothing in the libraries?
Well, from time to time you get lucky. Like, for example, I went to the Reagan Library. It was always sort of rumored that Reagan was invested, and it was...
Okay, Grant, we have to step away for a break.
Okay.
And folks, we will be back right after this. We are talking this evening with Grant Cameron from Canada, not from the USA. And he is talking with us about the presidential libraries and the information that's available, scant though it may be, about what the presidents know about UFOs. And I had asked a question. You know, it must be very frustrating, and, you know, how do you keep going all these years in the search for this evidence when you keep coming up against almost no evidence? And you had just begun to answer that whenever we went away for break. So, if you will, let's pick up there. How do you keep going?
Okay, I was mentioning the Reagan thing. Another reason to start before that is state that I live in the coldest major city in the world. So a lot of this for me is done during the winter. So I'll go down for a winter holiday and I'll sit in the library. But to me, it's warm weather, it's nice, whatever. The odd time you'll get to a library and you'll hit something and you'll sort of, it keeps you going. And I mentioned the fact that I was chasing Ronald Reagan with the stories. He used to talk in his speeches about 5 or 6 times when I actually did the research from the library. He talked about the alien invasion, how the world would become united if we were facing an alien invasion. And what I was doing is I was going through his speeches to see how did this get into the speech, because every single word in a presidential speech is checked. And I was trying to find out, did everybody sign off? Did the NSA, did the CIA sign off on the alien invasion remark in the speech? And at that point, I hit his actual handwritten notation where he talks about the alien invasion. And what had happened was he had put it into the speech and they had pulled it out. One of the jobs from his national security advisor, General Colin Powell, was to keep the alien invasion remarks out of Reagan's speeches. So they had pulled this from the United Nations 1987 speech where he talks about the alien invasion. Reagan had written back a little handwritten notation to the guy who was reading the speech, and he called it my fantasy. And he talked about the alien invasion, and he said, we put it back in again. So that kept me going. When I was at the Carter Library, I came across a file, which is still kind of notorious. It's a file on Steven Spielberg that has a picture of him and Carter, and there is no official record of him and Carter ever having had any contact, and yet there is a file there that I found that has a picture of Steven Spielberg with the president. And then you run something like when you actually get somebody on the record, and I had my sort of 15-second fame when I interviewed Dick Cheney on a radio talk show in Washington, D.C. I asked him the briefing question, which I say is the most important question for anybody who gets in contact with a 4-star general who has a unified command or a vice president or a president or somebody who may know this secret. And what you want to ask them is not, you know, are you interested in UFOs? Have you seen one? You don't ask them that. You ask them the briefing question. And that is, have you ever been told the truth? And the question goes as I asked Dick Cheney. Mr. Cheney, in all your jobs in government, have you ever been briefed on the subject of UFOs? If so, when was it and what were you told? And the point of the question is, did someone walk into your office and tell you the truth? Because there's so much disinformation, there's so much stuff that's been held secret. If you get somebody who shouldn't know what's going on, you ask them, were you briefed? Did someone walk in your office? And so I asked this of Dick Cheney about 3 months after he became vice president. He was in the White House when he answered the question on this radio talk show, and he said, if I briefed on that subject, it would probably be classified and I wouldn't be talking about it, which was an absolute shocker to me. He basically admitted the subject is classified. So it's those kind of things that sort of just keep you going, and you hear the rumors and you're trying to sort of substantiate rumors. And the odd time, like in the last couple of weeks, we got lucky a couple times. We got lucky with the Steven Spielberg, which is a story that I've been chasing since 1987 when this rumor first came out. And the Steven Spielberg story was that Reagan was very interested in movies. He was also rumored to be very interested in UFOs. And he would watch a lot of movies at the White House. And we knew from the record, being at the presidential library, I knew the record was that he had seen 2 Steven Spielberg movies one day after another. One was Poltergeist, which he watched at Camp David on the Saturday night. And on Sunday night, he screened E.T. the Extraterrestrial. This is June of 1982. And Steven Spielberg was there to show the movie. In 1987, 5 years after that incident occurred, Steven Spielberg talked to a producer, a film producer, who was also very interested in UFOs, Jamie Chandray, who had worked with Bill Moore, who was the guy, they were the people who released the MJ-12 document back in the 1980s. Steven Spielberg was working on a documentary of Steven Spielberg in Japan, and he talked to Steven Spielberg. Steven Spielberg told him that at the end of the movie, when E.T. movie was being shown, Reagan leaned over to him and said, I bet you there aren't 6 people in this whole room know how true this whole thing is. And Steven Spielberg was shocked by this comment, So he told us Jamie Chandray. It was written up in 1987. And from that point on, we tried to track Steven Spielberg down. I tried to track him down. Billy Koch from was with Florida Today at the time, a newspaper reporter, tried to track down Steven Spielberg to get him to answer the question, did Reagan actually tell you that what was in the E.T., the extraterrestrial, was real? Did he say that to you? Nobody was able to talk to him. Billy Cox was able to get to Marvin Levy, who was his public relations person. Levy said that Spielberg told him that he would not talk about private conversations he'd had with the president. So we were trying to track this rumor down, and a couple of years ago, I got a confirmation of the rumor. Another Hollywood producer came to me when I was at the X conference in Washington, D.C., and said, I was talking to a noted Hollywood director who told me that Steven Spielberg told him the same story that you have on your website about, I bet you there aren't six people who know how true this whole thing is. So I said, well, what exactly was on my website? Is it that story? And she said, well, I'll take it to him and I'll show him the website and I'll get him to confirm, is the story on your website true? She emailed me back about a month later, said, yes, this Hollywood director, I can't tell you who he is, but he's very notorious, he would know exactly who he was if I told you who he was. Said, yes, Steven Spielberg told him that story. So we chased this story from 1987 till 2 weeks ago. Steven Spielberg has three movies coming out now. He has the Super 8, which is out now. He has Cowboys and Alien, and he has another one, TNT, the TV network. So he's doing a promo for Super 8, and the guy who's asking the question, I guess, has seen my website. So he says, well, there's this rumored story about, and he gets it all sort of mixed up. He says, Reagan is talking about E.T., and they usher him out of the room. So Steven Spielberg says, no, they didn't usher him out of the room. He's the president of the United States. Steven Spielberg says, at the end of the movie, when E.T. was finished screening, Reagan stood up, and he, without smiling, without winking, he said, thank you, Mr. Spielberg, for bringing E.T. to show it to us. And some of the people in this room know that everything we've seen tonight here is absolutely true. To me, this is the biggest story in the world, because the president is the constitutional person who, if he said this is for real, would end the cover. This would be disclosure. So it's the big story. Nobody picked up on it. And the reason nobody picked up on it was because Steven Spielberg killed the story. Steven Spielberg said, Reagan stood up and he said this, but I think he was joking. And nobody in the media, Huffington Post picked it up, but nobody else would touch this story because Steven Spielberg said he thought it was a joke.
Reagan. No one in the media asked the obvious question: why did you think it was a joke? If he didn't wink, if he didn't give any kind of signal that what he's about to say is a joke, why would you think it's a joke? I think that's a good question Mr. Spielberg should be asked.
Exactly. But it's very hard to get to Steven Spielberg. It's almost almost impossible. This is since 1982. This movie is like 30 years ago. This is the only time he's ever been asked that question. There's all sorts of people who have tried to get to Steven Spielberg to get him to confirm this story. And I think the story is still alive because Steven Spielberg's publicist told Billy Cox, Steven Spielberg will not comment on private conversations he had with the president. He still hasn't. There is a good possibility, I think, that both incidents happened, that Reagan turned to him and said, I bet you there aren't six people in this room who know how true this whole thing is. And then he stands up to the open people there and publicly says, everything you've seen here, some of the people in the room know that everything you've seen here is absolutely true. So he's still keeping his confidence to the president, and he's just telling the open story. So I think he still has to answer that question, but the thing is to get to Steven Spielberg to ask him this question. It's almost impossible.
Well, who knows? Maybe he's either listening to the show or watching the show tonight, and maybe he'll call in later.
What we are doing now is we know who was in the room. When I first went to the Reagan Library, they would not release to me who was in the room. I said, well, who are the people? Because, of course, he said there are less than six people who know what's going on. We now know who the people are, and I don't know why that changed. They've released photographs from the event. They only released one photograph when I was there, maybe 10 years ago. We know that Sandra Day O'Connor on the Supreme Court was there. We know that the head of NASA was there. We know that a former director of the CIA was there. There was two athletes there. There was a couple of conservative people, one from Newsweek, the editorial board of Newsweek. The ambassador to the United States from Great Britain was there, which was kind of significant because as soon as the screening was done here, Steven Spielberg went to Great Britain and screened E.T. the Extraterrestrial for Prince Philip and the Queen. So we do know who these people are now, and there is some effort now to contact the other people who were in the room to get their opinion and say, did you hear Reagan say this, and did you think he was joking? Or not even just to get their reaction to what they thought when Reagan said, this is all for real.
I want to go back. Steven Spielberg is really pretty much at the eye of the storm on a whole lot of information out there about extraterrestrials, this story included. But I want to go back to this photograph you found of Steven Spielberg and President Carter. And there's nothing in the official documentation to show that this meeting ever took place. But if there is this photograph, it obviously did take place. Why do you think Carter was meeting with Spielberg?
One of the rumored stories, this was in, I think it was the Philadelphia Inquirer at the time. The rumored story was that Close Encounters of the Third Kind had been released in 1977. Jimmy Carter, of course, had campaigned and had stated that if he became president, he would release everything that was available on UFOs. What most people don't know is that the re-president is Jimmy Carter. Reagan had played in movies. He had seen, I think, 377 movies when he was in the White House, screened at the theater. Jimmy Carter saw 480. He was fascinated with movies. He was, and he was only in for one term. So he was watching a lot of movies, and the Philadelphia Inquirer had stated that his favorite movie was Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Okay, Grant, we have to step away for a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Don't go away. Hang around. We've got more coming your way. To the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Grant Cameron. And when we went away for break, we were talking about Steven Spielberg kind of being at the eye of a lot of this stuff, or at least a lot of this information about UFOs with presidents. And I had asked the question about this meeting between Spielberg and Carter. And I had asked, what do you think that's about? And you were telling us, Grant, that actually President Carter was more of a movie watcher than Reagan. 480, I think you said, movies in his one term, right?
Correct.
Okay. And so what do you think the link is between that and Spielberg?
Well, it's one of the big real mysteries, because it's not even a photograph. What had happened was, when you go to the library, you're just sort of throwing stuff around, throwing names at them and stuff. There's actually an archivist at the Carter Library who went to school with Chip Carter and had heard, when he was with Chip Carter, had heard the story about Jimmy Carter having the UFO sighting. So he's sort of sympathetic to UFOs, and he sort of helps me when I'm there, and he's not sort of laughing at you about, you know, the kind of research you're doing. When I did what's called an alpha search, I give them a bunch of names, and they find anything they can on a person and his relationship to the president or the White House. Steven Spielberg, when I got the file back, it wasn't a photograph. It was a Xerox copy of a photograph. So I called the archivist out, and I said, well, what is this? It's very strange. And what had happened was they had sent the photograph to Spielberg, and you could see the picture, and Steven Spielberg, over Steven Spielberg's head, they had put the envelope that they had addressed to Steven Spielberg, and over Jimmy Carter's face, they had the little note saying, here's a photograph with you and the president, and they put it over their faces, but you could still see who they were. So I got the archivist, and I said, well, this is weird. Where's the photograph? We had the date. We actually, all the photographs, you can go back, and every photograph that was taken on that day by the White House photographer, not found. So it's like a huge mystery. This thing is there, no indication. The favorite movie being Close Encounters, then this weird connection with Steven Spielberg being there. And Steven Spielberg had a lot of connections at the time. He had gotten a letter from NASA, which has been tracked almost back to the very time when it happened, that he got a 20-page letter from NASA, very upset about the fact that he was bringing out Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And Steven Spielberg was quoted as saying, when you get a letter of that length, you know that this is a serious subject. I never realized it was that serious with the government until I got this letter. And basically what the letter was saying is, we don't want Jaws 2. We don't want you putting out a movie that's going to, you know, scare the living daylights out of everybody. So they had sent him this letter, which we've gotten confirmations that Spielberg said this, but we haven't found the letter. So there was this direct indication that this favorite movie was there. Spielberg, there was the contact. And from then on, he appeared with every president. Now, a lot of it has to do with the fact he's bringing movies. And because the president can't go to a movie theater, almost every first-run movie that he wants to see is screened inside the White House, and usually the director comes. So a lot of the contact with Spielberg has is inside, because he's screening his movies there. It's not so much, except for Clinton. He was very close with Clinton. Spielberg's wife was very close with Hillary Clinton. And other than that, a lot of it is this connection. But then Spielberg really doesn't talk about it. You can't get Spielberg on the record to answer these questions. He pops up time and time again, and different presidents, and he's even on the record saying that he talked to three presidents about UFOs, but none of the presidents indicated to him that they had any firsthand information confirming the ET presence on Earth.
With the exception, perhaps, of the statement made by Reagan, it sort of gives you a hint that he had been read into some information about the ET presence. It's just a hint, but you know, in the rarefied air of the presidency, a hint sometimes speaks volumes. But it also is quite interesting, you know. You've got this letter from NASA to Spielberg, all upset because he's doing this film E.T. the Extraterrestrial. But then whenever this movie called Mission to Mars was in production, NASA is one of the major financial contributors to the production of that movie.
Yeah. And it's very strange. There's actually a fellow by the name of Robbie Graham who is doing his PhD thesis in Great Britain on this very subject. What is the interaction between military, intelligence, and government people in UFO material going into Hollywood? He's doing his PhD on this. And he's done extensive articles, and some of them appear on my website, presidentialufo.com. I have some of Robbie's articles, and he does a lengthy article on the Spielberg connection. But he's looking at this whole thing that you have these interactions of people in these UFO movies, because you need Air Force help, you need uniforms, you need all this kind of stuff. And a lot of this, the question is, this whole concept of gradual acclimatization of the people through movies, through commercials, is the government feeding stuff in there? And there's a very interesting story about this in connection with Steven Spielberg. And this is a story I didn't know until last year. As I said, Steven Spielberg did Close Encounters of the Third Kind, 1977, the first year that Carter was in the White House. The scenario, the plot behind the movie is this landing, prearranged landing of a UFO, an interaction between base of people and the UFO, the aliens. And it is very similar to another film, rumored film, that was done during the Nixon administration. And this is a story about the Holloman Air Force Base landing. There was two producers from Los Angeles who were contacted by the military at Norton Air Force Base in 1972. They were asked to do a documentary, a bunch of military documentaries. And then at the very end, they're in a clean room where there's no bugs or whatever, CIA clean room or CIA documentary stuff at Norton Air Force Base. And at the very end, the security manager who was talking to them said, oh, by the way, we'd like you to do, as well as these military documentaries on 3D holography and working with dolphins and stuff like this, we want you to do this UFO one. So anyway, to make a long story short, they're doing this documentary. Everybody in the military talks to them. They get clearance by, they're able to walk into the Pentagon without signing in. And they are given a film, and they do have possession of this film during the production of the film as they're putting it together. And it is about landing at Holloman Air Force Base. And according to what they were told, it was May or 1971.
All right, so we have to step away for a break.
Okay.
All right, we will be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Grant Cameron. And, you know, Grant, we're talking about what did the presidents know and when did they know it. And for those who have been listening for the past few minutes, they probably think I'm focusing on Steven Spielberg and what did Steven know and when did he know it. But I want to clarify why I'm focused on Spielberg. Since there's not a great deal of information in these presidential papers, in these presidential libraries, there's not a great deal of information there, I think Spielberg may be the key to knowing what the presidents, at least Carter, Reagan, and Clinton, what did the presidents know and when did they know it about UFOs? The key to that may be Spielberg. What do you think?
I agree, especially with Clint, who, if you know the story about Paul Davids, who was able to get to Clinton, Clinton told him, I'm fascinated in this subject. So if you take a look at my files, Spielberg material for the Clinton, there was maybe 600 pages, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Majority of it was withheld, but I can imagine that he and Clinton had numerous conversations about UFO. The problem is that he has his access, this idea that We're not going to discuss private conversations. It's the whole deal that he's the little guy when he's in the White House. He addresses the president when the president addresses him. It's not like you can phone up the president, demand answers, whatever. And that anything that he's told, he's going to keep secret because he's going to lose his access if he's seen to be squealing or leaking stories. Spielberg is almost as sort of elusive in terms of secrecy as anybody else. He's probably the hardest guy to get a hold of because we tried 20 years to get this story confirmed.
Okay, before we go on, let me ask you to try something here. What I'd like for you to do is turn the volume on your microphone down just a little bit because it's clipping, and I think it may be because it's up just a little too high.
Okay, hang on.
All right. Right, look, I can understand Spielberg not wanting to be seen to be, you know, leaking information from private conversations. I understand that. And yet, he has, in stating what he stated about his conversation with President Reagan, he certainly has leaked some information, and certainly has put enough out there to get your interest up and to get my interest up. One of the things I get asked a lot by callers to this show, and by the way, folks, we were not able last night, when it came time to open the telephones, we were not able to. We had some failing equipment, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and I showed you the piece of equipment. And we were just trying to get through the show, and I did not know that that particular piece of equipment was failing, but I knew something wasn't right. So anyway, we weren't able to open the phone lines last night. We will open the phone lines here in just a few minutes and invite you to join us. So get your fingers ready to do the dialing. Spielberg, Grant, is, you know, he is one of the people that callers have mentioned and have asked me what I thought about it. And what they say is there's so much stuff in these movies. And as well in some TV shows like X-Files, but particularly in the Spielberg movies, there seems to be so much information that seems too real. And the question then is that real information, and is it being leaked purposely to Hollywood? And you brought this up. Spielberg, of course, is in the center of all of this stuff because here he is hanging out with presidents and hearing comments like the one he says Reagan made. So what do you think? Is Spielberg privy to some information about UFOs because of his connection with presidents?
I would vote against that. That's why I was telling you the story about this documentary was done in the mid-1970s, the Holloman Air Force Base film, because it's so similar to the landing at that was done in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Whenever I go to the Clinton Library, I talk to Bob Emenegger, who's one of the producers of the documentary, and I said to him, I said, Bob, isn't it strange how your Holloman Air Force Base film that was pulled, sent back to the Pentagon, where the aliens land and whatever, is almost the same as Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind that was done a couple of years later? He said, oh, I guess I didn't tell you. When our thing was finished, Alan Sandler, who was the other producer, gave a copy of our documentary to Steven Spielberg, and that he had worked with Steven Spielberg's sister, Annie Spielberg, on UFO sci-fi films. And when Steven Spielberg released Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Bob Emenegger, the producer, told me that Steven Spielberg's mother came to him and said, I've seen your version of the landing and I've seen Stephen's version of the landing, and I like Stephen's better. If you take a look at the latest movie that he put out, Super 8, which just came out, he has the recovery team running around in blue berets. Now, I know about this, and anybody who's done enough research in UFOs will know that the rumored recovery teams of UFOs crashes were called U.S. Air Force Blue Berets, and that they wore blue berets. So if you look at Steven Spielberg's latest movie, he has the blue berets on the Air Force guys that are doing the recovery operation. A lot of this material you can get, whether it's through another documentary as Steven got with Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or from UFO research. I'm sure Steven, a lot of this stuff is just read up. He's got a lot of money. He can research. He can hire researchers. The connection is hard to make in terms of anything new that he's really put in there that really sort of changes things. I know with E.T., there was a rumored story that in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, he had the aliens looking too much like aliens. They looked like the little grays, like little people. And the rumored story was that he was talked to, that the government was upset that he made them look so much like aliens. So if you see E.T., which was done about 5 years later, E.T. looks nothing like an alien. He's this bizarre-looking thing. That's the kind of stuff where you get the stories that they're talking to Steven Spielberg and trying to tell him to tone it down, to change things. But a lot of the material that comes in these UFO movies is very easy to find in UFO literature if you have somebody researching for you or if you are into the field yourself.
Well, if it's already all out there, why would NASA be upset about it?
Well, the story was that NASA was upset because he had just had JAWS, and apparently JAWS created a situation where nobody in America wanted to go to the beach because they were so afraid of sharks, even though they were in areas where there was no sharks. And that's what they were saying, was they knew it was going to be a big production, and they didn't want him to have an alien invasion movie. Now, if you take a look at Steven Spielberg's movies, they're all the alien invasion type movies. But back then, that was the rumored story inside this letter, was don't create another JAWS. So it wasn't so much that they didn't want him doing the UFO thing. It was the fear that they didn't want him putting out into the American public.
Well, one must wonder, what business is it of NASA's, what a private business and movie producer has to say or has to do? I mean, really, what business is it of theirs? I understand they have their concerns within their own house and within their own conversations. But I really don't see that they have any place, authority, or right to tell a movie producer, don't do this and don't do that. That's the kind of stuff of the old KGB days.
Linda Howe. Linda Howe, it's a clear story. She was contacted. She, you know, won a little Emmy for documentary. Was when she was in Denver in 1982, whenever she produced this, The Strange Harvest, which was the first major documentary to talk about cattle mutilations. She was called in by Doty at Kirkland Air Force Base, and she said, sat in the office, the first thing he said to her was, the government is very upset about the documentary you've made about cattle mutilation, and I'm here to help you. And then he offered her the whole thing, the Hall of Air Force Base. He's going to give her the same film that Bob Emmerich offered about the alien landing, because she was doing another documentary for Home Box Office. And they dragged it out so much that Linda Howe lost the documentary. They kept promising they were going to give her the material. Home Box Office was getting upset. Linda couldn't come up with a guarantee that this would be a legitimate film. And she ended up losing the documentary because of what Richard Doty had done making this offer. But she had been told directly that the government was upset about her doing a documentary about cattle mutilations. And this is when cattle mutilations first started getting popularized in the American mind.
Well, of course, Richard Doty is a name that has only darkness associated with it in UFO circles these days, and because he has a reputation for that sort of thing. And I think he would say that, well, I did what I did because I was under orders from the government. And then, you know, I think my response to that would be, yeah, well, okay, you did what you did, and now our opinion of you is what our opinion is. And you just have to live with it.
Those are the people that really attract me now, because I've gone through the whole hierarchy, moving it up to the president, getting some answers, some indications that the president might know, he might not know. But it was, I got to the level of people like Richard Doty. How can Richard Doty, who's working for the American government, come out, talk to people, producer, directly this kind of stuff, and you can tell he's getting orders, and nobody touches him? This is the government talking through Richard Doty. So I started to follow people who were intelligence people and this whole Avery group, people who had had connections with the government, people who had had an interaction with the UFO phenomena, to see what were they saying, because to me that sort of leads you back to where the power might be. If somebody is telling Richard Doty to set up Linda Howe, to do whatever, to throw her off the track, whatever, that sort of is the trail that, if you follow that trail back, who is Richard Doty's boss, who is giving the order, you go back to who's actually running the cover-up.
So who do you think is running the cover-up?
Well, that's the big question. I would say I'm not 100% sure, but the one person who I say knows where all the bodies are buried is a man who works for the National Intelligence Office. His name is Ronald Pendolfi.
Say that again. Your microphone cut out.
Oh, okay. Ronald Pendolfi is with the National Intelligence Office. He was, when Bill Clinton's science advisor did a UFO briefing, when they heard that Rockefeller was coming to the White House, they requested a UFO briefing from the CIA. That briefing request ended up Ronald Pendolfi's desk. Ronald Pendolfi knows who has access, who doesn't have access. He's notorious for talking, leaking material into the UFO community, and he's also very well known as having hid the UFO Weird Desk, which is the desk at CIA, which has all the phenomenology files. UFO, remote viewing, ESP, psychokinesis, all this kind of stuff that you sort of read about the CIA having been involved in. All that material is supposedly run out of the Weird Desk. He has run it since, I think, 1983, and is now with the National Intelligence Office, which oversees all the intelligence agencies and which briefs the president and high-ranking officials. What he has stated when he's leaking material to various people, he has stated that all flag officers in the Navy Intelligence Office have been briefed about the core story. The core story is the basic story. Aliens are here. We've had an interaction with them. There's been a crash. Just the basic core story that certain people are given. Another indication of who I think knows, and this I got from George Filer, and it's confirmed by an interview we did. George Filer states, I asked him, he was a briefing officer who had briefed the general on UFOs, stated that any force general with a unified command knows what's going on. The president doesn't necessarily have a need to know. As has been said, Ronald Pendolfi had stated when he was asked about a briefing for George Bush Jr., he said, forget it. The presidents can't be players. We tell them what they need to know and hope we don't have to put them down. Democracy and capitalism are not the end-all and be-all of human existence. So he's basically saying the president is really not in the loop, and he is saying that Navy intelligence flag officers are in the loop. And the confirmation that we got of the four-star generals, we did interview one who was four-star general Wesley Clark when he was running for the Democrats in 2004. He was asked in New Hampshire when he started the campaigning for the presidency. He started talking about his vision of space and the fact that he believed we could go past the speed of light. I got a message from somebody that said he's been briefed on crashed flying saucers. So we went on the campaign trail to try to talk to him. Finally, at the end of the campaign, Dr. David Rudiak talked to him in Reno, Nevada, and asked him the briefing question. General, have you ever been briefed on the subject of UFOs? So was it and what we were told? And basically, the answers he gave indicated that he did have some inside knowledge to what was going on.
So this Pandolfi guy made the statement that there are people at various levels that have been briefed and do know, and that the presidents do not necessarily have a need to know, and basically they're not players in this game, and we just hope everything goes along okay, and they don't have to be put down. I think that's the term you used. Is that the term Pandolfi used?
That, according to Dan Smith, who the vast majority of his material is leaked, guy of Dan Smith, whose father was a high-ranking tax official with the Eisenhower administration.
Yeah.
That's what Dan Smith has on his website.
Okay, your microphone is breaking up so badly we can't understand about every third or fourth syllable. What do you take that to mean when he says, we just hope they don't have to be put down?
Well, I mean, it's kind of obvious what it means. I mean, he's never said it directly in the public. Dan Smith was asked about it by me as to why it was on the website. He sort of indicated it meant that the president should stay out of it, that if he gets it, that it's not a direct threat. But again, we don't have Pandolfi on the record. This is just through Dan Smith. And Dan Smith was asked by me. He was also asked Coast to Coast about the statement on his website that he got from Pandolfi. Shirley McLean confirmed it as well. She's talked to Jimmy Carter, because Jimmy Carter is now saying he didn't believe aliens here. Shirley McLean said that she asked Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter said he had asked his intelligence official, and that his intelligence official, his officials had told him, you don't have to know, you're only here for 4 years, seeming to confirm that same idea that the president doesn't have to know. The other person who has made that statement that the president really doesn't have a need to know is Kit Green, who ran the weird desk at the CIA before Ronald Pandolfi. He stated in an interview that he had talked to three ex-presidents and that the presidents always brought up UFOs, but that they really didn't discuss it because apparently the presidents don't have a need to know.
Well, I'll tell you, when Carter was there, and he was told, you don't have a need to know, I have heard that the person who told him that was George H. Bush. I don't know if that's true or not, but I've heard that that's true.
That is the story that was told by Danny Sheehan, who was working on two studies, UFO studies for Jimmy Carter. I think he's a pretty reputable witness. But Jimmy Carter has been asked on the record about this comment that he asked Bush Sr. for the UFO files. And he has denied the story. So he's denying it, but I think Danny Sheehan is a fairly reputable witness. He was the head of the Jesuit Council in Washington, D.C. can't see why Denny Sheen would make up this story. And he said he got it from Marcia Smith, who was working on two studies, one on UFOs, one on extraterrestrial intelligence for Jimmy Carter. I think the story is true.
Well, it would indicate that we have people running things in our government that fully believe they are far more important than the people we elected to run the government. Now, that doesn't surprise me. We have, in fact, run across that sort of thing before. It's not new to us, but it just adds to the evidence. And, you know, I think it's a very serious thing when you have people in these government agencies that believe they are more important than the people that were elected to run these agencies.
I think there are rules, and I think the president basically knows, whether it's plausible deniability or whatever it is, he knows, and I think people are, there's a set of commands. For example, I don't know if you interviewed John Alexander. John Alexander is friends with Ronald Pandolfi. If you go to John Alexander's website, he has a series of photographs there of people, famous people he's been with, whatever. He has a picture of he and Ronald Pandolfi. And under Ronald Pandolfi's picture, he has the words, "Those who should know, do." So I think within the government, there is a protocol where certain people are in a need to know, and that they believe that that's the way it should be done, that people have...
Okay, Grant, we have to step away from break. I will give you a telephone call in this room. Folks, we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Grant Cameron. During this break, we've attempted to do something to alleviate the problems with his microphone, and we have no idea if that's going to work or not, but we're going to give it a shot here. So, Grant, we're talking about the president, and we're talking about the whole thing of whether he knows, doesn't know, how much does he know. And, you know, it's a bit baffling, really, to think that this guy that we call the most powerful man in the world is told, you don't have a need to know this, so we're not going to tell you. I know they do it because we've heard the stories, but it's baffling to figure out the justification for, you know, not telling the guy who is the commander in chief. Is he the commander, or is that also fiction?
I agree. Absolutely agree. It's something that's sort of amazed me for years, and that's what I spend most of my time. I wake up at night trying to figure out how this can work. I mean, it constitutionally, if this is, the president is out of the loop, you've got a problem in the United States.
All right. Folks, we would like for you to have the opportunity to join the conversation. And you do that by giving us a call. If you've got a question or a comment about any of this discussion, we want to hear from you. And the telephone number is 623-444-5889. We do have a caller online. So, caller, if you will, tell us your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin and Mr. Cameron. This is Victoria from Washington. And I am so glad to be able to ask this question because it has always baffled me. And I will just say that in your promos and stuff about Carl Sagan, extraordinary questions require extraordinary evidence. Why, and this is my question, why is it that the government thinks that we are such apes, such ignorant, moronic apes, that they can take the information, but the public can't? They're just ordinary people. They're people too. We're people. What gives them the right to say they can handle it and we can't? I think we can handle it. I think we deserve it, and I think it's our inalienable right to know what they are doing and what they have done. And I want to see it all come out, and I want the truth. And I'll listen offline. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Okay, thanks for the call. Okay, well, Grant, what do you think about that comment?
Okay, it's a little more complex than that. If you go to my website, I have an article that said, sort of, I can't remember the name of the title is, but it says, the reason the government has decided not to tell you what's going on. And it used to be called the 64 reasons, and I actually have over 64 reasons why they've decided to cover it up. If you take a look at almost anything inside the American society today, secrecy has sort of taken over all sorts of aspects of what goes on. And I sort of tell the example of trying to get photographs from John Podesta, who was Clinton's chief of staff, his 50th birthday party at the White House. I went to all the officials. I fought total denial. Cannot get any of these photographs or the video from that birthday party. It's almost impossible to get anything. And they'll say it's sources and methods. I don't think the main reason is that you can't handle it. It's that the military, the technology that's involved with this stuff, who cares where they're from? If you have the technology that you can abduct a foreign leader, pick him up, get into his head, give him instructions, do all this kind of stuff, and be home in Washington for lunch, that's the technology that you would die to get. The technology that's involved in UFOs. The Canadians in 1950 said, when they had been down to the United States, they were told by American officials, this is the most highly classified secret in the United States. Flying saucers exist, and there's a small group running to try to figure out what's going on. It's the most highly classified secret. It's of extreme importance, 2 points higher than the hydrogen bomb. The most highly classified secret, and for good reason, because there's a pile of different things that they want to... If they're not going to release Podesta's birthday party photographs, they sure aren't going to release how UFOs are propelled or what kind of technology they developed. We've discovered some of the technology they developed. This is a technological gold mine.
Well, certainly I can see reasons why they would not want to release some of the information. But you would not have to release all of the information in order to just not be involved in a cover-up anymore. For instance, they could release the information that, yes, extraterrestrials do exist, they are real, and we are in contact with them, as are other governments on this planet. They don't have to tell us the propulsion system. They don't have to tell us any weapons, if there are any. They don't have to get into the actual technology that could be used for war. They don't have to do that. All they have to do is just admit that contact has been made. And if they did this, I mean, how does that blow the lid off of national security? I fail to see a connection.
Okay, let me explain. If you're the president, Kevin, and we release the fact that UFOs, and I'm briefing you, and I say, Mr. President, if we release the fact that ETs exist, they're here, and we're not talking about the rest, there's nothing we can do for a lot of things that might happen. Within 5 minutes, Mr. President, you're probably to be facing the question about alien abductions. Mr. President, you're constitutionally responsible for the protection of the American people. It's been estimated that millions of people have been abducted by these aliens. What, Mr. President, are you doing to stop it? It's been rumored, Mr. President, that tens of thousands of cattle have been mutilated by these aliens. What are you doing to stop it? They can fly around, Mr. President, in our airspace. There's nothing we can do. There's reports that aircraft have been gone down. Military people have been brought down by these aliens. What are you doing to stop it? What the scenario is that the president, the image of the president is extremely important. You are not going to stand the president up in front of the American people when he has no answers to 99% of the questions. He's supposed to be the powerful guy, and that may be the reason that the president stays away from it, that he knows he shouldn't get involved in the subject. Plausible deniability. You don't want to be in a position where everybody starts asking you all these questions and the president starts hemming and hawing. The president's image is supposed to be in charge. There's nothing they can do about 99% of what is going on, and they don't want that being released. If you own Shell, I was told by a Canadian official when I started in the 70s, said, Grant, you know, releasing this thing tomorrow, sell everything you got, because nothing's going to be worth anything. If you got Shell Oil and you release, ETs are real, they're here. Shell Oil, $100, is going to at 60 and head for zero for us. The only reason people buy stocks is because they think it's going up. Nobody's going to buy Shell. Everybody's going to sell. That's the kind of stuff that you cannot put out there. Because once you spill the milk, Kevin, you spill the milk. You can't put it back in the glass. You can't. That's why they've had, I think, disclosure of documents. The MGL was a document. Then Bob Ryan got 4,000 pages of documents. I think they're phony, but I think they released by an organization. This is not Richard Doty. This is not one person. This is an organization leaking documents to try to tell us what's going on and yet keep the cover-up going. They want to keep you, give you the core story. We've got an alien. We've had interaction. This is for real. So that something does break, not back in 1947 in your mentality. But to put it out, so many things. If you take a look at the 64 reasons I list, you'll see a lot of stuff. That sure, maybe they can stop the stock market from melting down. Maybe they've got answers to some of the stuff. But a lot of the stuff they can't control. You're going to have thousands of media appear on the White House lawn within an hour. And the questions are going to start to come. It's going to be like a feeding frenzy. Everything's going to stop. And unless you've got the answers and you can show that you are in control, you are in a lot of trouble. Because it is going to melt down. And if you're the president, you want to go down in history as being a good guy. You don't want to be the guy who had everything melt under your administration.
Well, everything's melting in this administration, so this might be a good time, since there's not really much to lose that
which
hasn't
isn't
been
the reason
lost.
That if you're not going to do anything about a $14 trillion deficit, if you're going to procrastinate on that, you're going to procrastinate on UFOs because the government procrastinates. So if you're going to brief the president, you say, Mr. President, and Walker, the president of Penn State University, at one point in an interview got upset with us and said to us, when we were trying to say, you're an old man, come on, tell us, you know what happened. He said, look, what's the deal? We haven't blown up the world yet. And that is, I think, the mentality inside Inner Circle is, we can drill another well, not the end of the world, let's rocked the boat. If you give us 5 more years, we have 5 more years of answers, 10 more years of answers. The longer keep this thing going, the more answers we're going to get, because we don't have any answers and we don't know how to control it. But procrastination, if you're going to procrastinate on a $14 trillion deficit, you're going to procrastinate on something that is going to cause a lot more catastrophe than the debt. This is a big thing that really go bad if it doesn't go the way they think. And once you spill the milk, you can't control it. The media takes over, the questions start, and then the crazies, the people who think that the aliens are eating us at having human McNuggets on Mars and stuff like this. All those people suddenly become the people who have the answers. And you're all these, how do you control all the crazies bringing
material? Well, I think the big question, when you've got all the media showing up at the White House and they've got all these thousands of questions, I think the one really good way to handle it when they throw all these questions at the president is for him to just say, and where have you guys been for 60 years?
Exactly. I agree.
I mean, about the most, it's a toss-up. I don't know whether politicians are the most useless and irrelevant or whether it's the media. But they're both in that basket. They're pretty useless and pretty irrelevant. And there's not ever been one good thing that Washington, D.C. cannot, by legislation, make worse. All right, we are going to take a break. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Grant Cameron. And we're talking about this whole thing about what did the presidents know and when did the presidents know about UFOs. Grant, how much do you think this president knows, President Obama? How much do you think he knows about UFOs?
My guess is that he may have a basic knowledge that there's something going on. Stay out of the details. Obama's problem is he doesn't really care. He was asked when he was campaigning, he faced the UFO question a couple of times. One was in a debate, and at that point he was asked about life in outer space. And he said, I don't know if there's life in outer space, but I do know there's life here on Earth that hasn't been taken care of. And then he talked about school kids and, the poor people and all sort of stuff. That's his priority. He's sort of a guy who's interested in the poor and the people here, the real left-wing Democratic platform. The other one that he was asked, and a lot of people who get in a tough position use humor, and he used humor. They asked him, if you became president, you found out ETs were real, what would you do? And he said, well, it depends whether they're Democrats or Republicans. So he used humor to evade the question. I don't think he's a smart guy. I think he would probably try to stay out of it. I think he probably knows there's something to it. He may have basic, sort of a basic briefing as to the core story. This is real. Stay out of the rest of it. We're handling it and given the chain of command as to who's working on it. And, Mr. President, if something happens, we'll brief you. The same as on the other side, there's a lot of stuff that he doesn't know. People don't realize how big the president actually is, that he really reads nothing, that all of the material that he gets is through briefing. When they know it's going to come up at a news conference, brief him on a subject. And if you take a look at the latest Area 51 book that was put out by this Los Angeles Times reporter, she talked about Bill Clinton making a disclosure about using handicapped kids using this. You know, they were putting radioactive material in porridge, stuff like this.
Yeah, let me repeat that because you broke up so bad. I can read your lips, though, on the screen. What you just said, and for the audience that's listening, you just made mention of when Bill Clinton's administration and Bill Clinton exposed the fact that there had been testing on American citizens, kids, disabled people, and actually also even prisoners, and where they put radioactive material into their food and with the kids into the milk. And go ahead from there.
Okay, and in the book, you read the Area 51 book, she talked about the fact that there was actually more to the story than Bill Clinton released, because he did not have a need to know to get to some of the documents. So here he was, he made this big release about the fact we'd done this, apologized, but he didn't know the extent of what had actually gone down, because he didn't have a need to know. And Bill Clinton did state on a couple of occasions that he knew that he wasn't getting the answers. The first time we knew about it was with Webster Hubble. When Clinton was in office, Webster Hubble left. He wrote a book called Friends in High Places. He talked about Bill Clinton sending him out to look at the answer of two questions. Number one, are there UFOs? And number two, who killed JFK? If Bill Clinton wanted an answer, why would he go to a lawyer who was the assistant attorney general? He knew nothing about UFOs. The reason that he used Hubble to go and find out about UFOs is because he didn't trust anybody else. Hubble was a friend from Little Rock. And why would he ask who killed JFK? We already knew he was a lone man. Bill asked Hubble to go out and get the answer to JFK, who killed JFK. He didn't believe that either. So the President of the United States is sending someone out to do an investigation because he doesn't believe the official government answer. Secondly, in Hong Kong, in 2005, Bill asked a question about UFOs. Do the president ask secrets from one administration to another? And he started to talk about Roswell. And he said, and to quote him, I'm probably not the first president they kept in the dark or the bureaucrats tried to work out. So that's all confirmation that even the president, even if he knows that he's probably not being told the truth, lives with.
All right. Well, I'll tell you, it's a fascinating, fascinating black hole of information. This black hole that sucks in all the information and lets no light out. About what the presidents know. And, you know, the picture you paint is that perhaps, in many cases, the president is as much in the dark as the rest of us. And, you know, I think one thing it points out, though, is the idea that this is the most powerful man on the earth is an optical illusion. Obviously, there are people much more powerful than the president who can just tell the president, run along, little boy, you bother me.
I think their answer to that would be that the president needs to know about weapons secrets and this and that. There's a whole bunch of stuff he doesn't need to know, that if it becomes critical, they bring him into the loop. I think our people who are in charge and who are doing sort of the best they can, I just at this point have figured out who they are and how they get to become the president. That is history. Because you wouldn't say the president should be running the show. No matter who controls it, who's gathering information, the president is the guy who should be at the top of any pyramid that you want to draw.
Well, I certainly agree with that.
Well, Grant, I appreciate you being with us this evening. And, folks, if you go to my website and you click on the photograph of Grant Cameron, it will take you to his website. And it's well worth going there to visit and to read and to see the wealth of information that's there. Grant, very quickly, tell us, what is your web address? Some folks are not where they can click on your picture.
The web address is presidentialufo.com.
Presidentialufo.com. All right. If you will, just stand by for a moment, and I will give you a telephone call right after the show, but I have to bring the show in for a landing. We are just about out of time. Ladies and gentlemen, Grant Cameron. And what do the presidents know? If you think that the presidents are the most powerful men on the planet, they are powerful. But if you think they're the most powerful, this should have been an eye-opener. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. And you can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.